Beyond Comics, episode 70. Fuck, I'm hungover.
Again? Is this a sequel?
I'm just wondering why you even had to say what episode.
I don't know. Listeners, listen. This is an episode that's numbered with a 7 and a 0.
I think you just gave them a direct order.
Wow.
Also, send me money, I guess. I'm giving them direct orders.
Well, welcome to Drunk on Comics, everybody. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss comics and conventions and collecting.
Our hangovers.
Our hangovers.
Drinking.
Yeah, that's what we do these lately, is discuss our hangovers.
Well, fall time is a bitch for
There's
us.
So many beer fests. It was the Polish holiday weekend for us, and being Polish was awesome.
And then last weekend, Oktoberfest. What's next?
Halloween?
You go trick-or-treating for beers?
Halloween parties.
Yeah, trick-or-treating for beers, and then I'm pretty sure the Betty Ford Clinic is that right after that.
Well, then you get Thanksgiving drinking.
Oh, God, the night before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and then you get Christmas drinking. I mean, every month's got its drinking holiday.
Yeah.
This was Polish St. Patrick's Day, that was all.
and that's really what it is. Oh, by the way, I'm Derek. Oh.
I'm Matt.
Oh, Kevin. Hi.
I'm hungover, still.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Pulaski Days here in our town is a 41-year celebration where basically you just go jumping from Polish Hall to Polish Hall.
God, and I never knew there were so many flipping Polish halls. There's like, a dozen of them here. And
At least.
It's not a huge city, but they're all consolidated down into a very small area. It's very weird.
Well, there's kind of like two sections, which is nice because you can go hall hopping and get around, but there's two areas that you can go. There's the west side and then there's the Michigan Street, so
yeah,
it's cool. Yeah, it's all our ghetto slang and stuff, you know, those Polish ghettos.
I learned the hard way, drink the better whiskey, not the cheap shit.
I'm gonna really enjoy making fun of you today. All right, guys, let's get things kicked off here with Off the Shelf. We're going to be talking about comics, so you do have a warning that I know for Matt, I'm going to be ruining stuff for you.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, but, you know, if you don't like spoilers and you want to read your books first, here's your chance, here's your warning. Otherwise, stick around. And this week, once again, brought to you by inter-comics.com. Go check them out. They ship worldwide. Awesome prices, great blogs, good site all around. Who wants to start?
You know what? I'll kick things off. Because God is dead.
Uh-oh.
In a comic book form. I'm not trying to make grandiose religious statements.
I'm not
here.
Dead yet.
Tony, you look dead.
Yeah.
No, I'm God. That's my impression of God.
Sadly, that's the best impression you've ever done.
Thank you.
All right. So, this story is written by Jonathan Hickman and Mike Costa. Art by D. Amorim. And colors by Juan Mar. Just one name there.
Yeah.
Good book. And I think Tony covered it, or at least mentioned it when number one came out. Zordon!
Well, it wouldn't be a good
episode. We gotta go save Angel Grove again. We'll be right back.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a perfect episode if we didn't hear from Zordon.
So this book is brought to you from Avatar Press. And Avatar's kind of got that reputation for the bloody, and this isn't this isn't overly gory, but there is definitely some violence and some impaling and sacrifice because the gods have returned to Earth and they want to conquer or be worshipped. And in the last issue, Odin had gotten all of the gods together and were like, "Hey, we should have this war council. Let's talk about how we're going to divide up the Earth." And in this one, a lot of the gods are like, well, we're not gods of conquering. We're okay with just being worshipped. And, well, we're okay with our little area and we'll keep our worshippers. And so they all kind of disperse to their own realms. And Odin's like, okay, yeah, that's a good idea. And then Odin, Loki, and Thor go and attack the Indian gods and kick their asses. And what's funny is the Indian gods, they're Trimitar, which is like three gods in one, and so they basically form like a giant Transformer coming together.
Well, the one part. Now, I'm not familiar with these gods, so forgive me if this is
sacrilegious. The whole book is sacrilegious.
Yeah,
though,
I'm not worried about that. I'm just worried about like not knowing my shit on this one particular god. But yeah, when he does turn into that, it reminded me of Manny Faces from He-Man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's what I loved is they said, I am the world, you know, come fight the world. And Odin just goes, I'm the ruler of 9 worlds, and I made my son's hammer to break things like you. And so Thor throws his hammer. And it basically, what I really like about this is actually seeing Thor and Odin be violent brutes, like Vikings, rather than we're noble heroes from Asgard, and only Loki is kind of mischievous and jokester. I mean, Loki is just as lying and conniving as ever. But so far, I like this.
Kevin's got something here.
I'm so confused. This is by Avatar, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And there's Thor in it.
Well, they're Asgardian gods.
Thor's a mythical.
Yeah. Creature, so you can't have the copyrights for Thor. Now, if he was the heroic Thor and they drew him,
the mighty Thor,
the image could be copyrighted from.
Okay, so I'm not seeing cool winged hat.
Well, he still has a cool winged hat, and there's his goats, and he's still got his hammer, but it is drawn different, and he behaves much more differently, too. It's kind of like saying, hey, I'm going to write this book about Jesus, and somebody's like, nope. Disney already owns the copyrights to the Bible.
Yeah, out of anybody, Disney could get Jesus copyrighted, though.
So, anyways, the humans are still trying to figure out if they can kill the gods, and they're Stephen Hawking scientists, because he's in a wheelchair and he speaks with a computer voice.
Talking to the Albert Einstein.
Yeah, scientist. The Albert Einstein scientists. There's a lot of archetypes in this book, which is nice. Makes it easy for you to recognize people. But they said, hey, if the gods are physical bodies, they're physical of this world, we just need to capture one so we can figure out how to kill them. So this is, it's an interesting book. It is sacrilegious, but at the same time, I think, I know for me personally, I'm looking at some of these and going, oh yeah, look, there's Odin's 8-legged horse. I know that from mythology classes. And then I look at some of the Indian gods and I'm like, I don't know very much about them. So it's actually spurring me to find out more about these different mythologies and different religious, ancient religious figures. So
The one thing I liked about this book, Matt, though, is that I think Jonathan Hickman and Mike Costa both did a really nice job at not giving you the normal story.
Yeah.
You know, because I expected it to be strictly gods coming down and, you know, that they're all going to have a god superhero team up.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were going to come down and it was going to be the scientists trying to figure out a way to stop them. Where it turns out that it was a very nice twist from the writers to throw in that they aren't going to agree, and now there's going to be war amongst the gods.
Yeah, so the gods are going to be fighting each other too, and humanity is just going to try to figure out how to kill all of them. So
yeah, but I think that's the one thing, though. The writing in general in this book has been fantastic for the first two issues.
Yeah.
That's what's got me hooked on it.
Now, I noticed you got a different cover?
Yes. This,
variant cover.
Okay, same book, different cover.
Yep.
You got the one that has the many faces on it. Then another cover, which is just generic. Which one's the limited?
They're equal, as far as I can tell. Yeah, this is the Jonathan Hickman cover, I believe.
Yeah, the regular cover was from Jonathan Hickman. All the other covers are Jason Burroughs. So
It seems weird because I know you guys mentioned God is Dead once before, but I'm not familiar with Avatar, so it's kind of surprising to see
Avatar. I think they put out a lot of variant covers. For their stuff, and I don't know if that's to confuse people to make them buy more copies, because I almost did that with Uber this last week. I was going, wait, I don't have that Uber, and then I had to look at, oh, it's number 6, I do have that one.
Yeah, I know that they do it with the Badlands. There's always multiple covers for that. Absolution Rubicon, which I've been reading, which has been fantastic. That one has
some of the covers that I've seen come out of Avatar really are, you know, art worthy. Particularly the Uber series, they've got the propaganda line, and so they always have a variant cover that looks like a propaganda poster that you would have seen for World War II, and those have been really cool.
Yeah, I don't know, and they do a lot of wraparound covers, and I love the wraparound covers.
Because those are cool.
You get more art for the same price.
So who's next?
I'll step up to the plate, guys, and take a whiff.
Swing bad about
it. So actually, I got a dynamic duo of review goodness for you guys. Okay, so first up we have from DC Comics, Green Lantern 24. Now this is a first of a five-part series called Lights Out.
Okay.
I get it because they've got lanterns. And okay.
This is written by Robert Venditti. Pencils by Billy Tan. Inks, Rob Hunter. Colors, Alex Sinclair. So, what's happening in the world of Green Lantern these days? Relic. As Hal Jordan said in this issue, who's Relic? He sounds old. But yeah, this new character.
Never mind.
Pay attention.
I'm lost. Yeah,
step your game.
Did you read the Villains Month Relic?
I did. Okay. I really sort of. It was another issue where I had to read it like three times to fucking understand what the hell was happening. But I'm going to actually just give a quick recap of what's happening. Because if you haven't read Green Lantern lately, like that issue, the 23.1, or New Guardians, where this character's kind of first appeared, my interpretation of the villain Relic is that he's a tree-hugging bastard from the time before Big Bang. So apparently there was a universe before Big Bang happened.
They don't have that TV show there?
I was like, man, I don't remember not having that like on syndication either.
What's even crazier is I got all the super deluxe TV package, and it's on all the flipping time because I also get the West Coast feeds. So it's like whenever I want to watch that show, it's like almost on demand basically. So he has a strong belief that there's a finite amount of energy in the emotional spectrum. And then he's whining to everybody, quit using all the powers! Stop! And then the power does run out and the universe blows up. And he's all like, aha, I told you so. And now...
What a jerk.
But now he's back as some sort of badass. I don't think they've really explained why he's went from some sort of meager scientist to some super awesome bad guy. And now he wants to save the universe by taking everyone's Green Lantern, Blue Lantern powers away from
everybody. Because then they can't use up all the emotions.
Exactly. So now he is going across the galaxy and sucking up everybody's powers. So... and Derek, you'll like this one. He goes around calling everybody Light Smiths. we'll explain that joke here a little bit. Okay?
That's awesome.
Okay. So, but my other one is Marvel's Hunger number 3.
Can we go back to Green Lantern for a second?
Okay.
I'm more curious about a continuity level.
Okay.
Because I picked up some of the point one, two, three, fours for villains, and none of the DC books that I'm reading came out this week, the regular ones.
Okay.
Continuity, the only thing that I read was Forever Evil. Mm-hmm. And my curiosity is, in all of the books that I've read up until this week, the heroes are still gone. Are the heroes gone in the Green Lantern book?
No, they're around. I mean, they're.
But are they on Earth or?
No, they're in Hoa.
Okay, right. So right now it's probably okay for the Green Lanterns to be around because they're not on Earth.
Well, and it's only Kyle though that's gone or that's still there, right? Because Hal Jordan's not.
No, everything is happening in Hoa. Like in this issue, you find the. Oh, I'm blanking on Hal's girlfriend, Carol Danvers.
No,
that's Marvel.
That's Captain Marvel.
No, God damn it. You got the Star Sapphire. I'm trying to think of her real name.
Okay.
You have Star Sapphire and the White Lantern, Kyle Rayner. They actually go to Oa and try to let people know, like, hey, you got a baddie coming, do something about it. So quick summary then of Marvel Hunger number 3. I'll tie it together here in a moment. So Hunger number 3, it's 3 of 4. And I believe this is, it helped me out, guys. I believe this is a prelude to another story arc coming out here, coming up.
Cataclysm?
Cataclysm.
Yeah.
You guys heard about Cataclysm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't know about it. I just been picking up Hunger because I love big baddies. But then, so I saw this just at my comic books shelf. But anyway, written by Joshua Hale.
Fialkoff.
Thank you. Art by Leonard Kirk. Colors by Jesus A. Burftoff. Here's your mini recap of Hunger, because I know we've mentioned it in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So you got some fucking morons messing up the space-time continuum.
God damn you, Avengers. Wolverine specifically.
Yeah. I wasn't going to point fingers.
I was going to say Hank McCoy, but all right.
So, number two, you take Galactus, the big purple dude from one universe, and you meet him up with Galactus, the big swarm from another universe, and you merge them together. And then number three, then you have the Watcher picking some dude at random.
It's not a dude at random, it's Rick Jones.
Random.
Rick James?
Rick Jones. Rick Jones is a longtime, more early Marvel.
He was
the guy that the Hulk saved from the gamma explosion.
Oh.
And he was the one that when Captain Marvel would hit his negabands, he would come into this world, but he was cursed so that someone had to swap places with him. So Rick Jones would switch places with him. So he has been a long-time Marvel character. Right now he's like a blue abomination in the regular Marvel universe.
Also, early on, he had the Teen Brigade, which they kind of were the call center for the Avengers for a while, and Cap kind of took him under his wing. Then he's like, no, I still love Bucky. I can't be with you, Rick Jones. Oh, wait, no, that's a slightly different version of it. But you get
that was
the
fan fiction version, right?
Yeah. Like, love Bucky.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, I'm sorry.
Anyway, so, but he's not completely random.
Oh, okay.
So.
I didn't know that. To me, it just seemed like, oh, just random.
I need a rainbow that says, the more you know.
all right. So, I'm talking about these. I'm smashing them together because they both have a common theme to them. And doom and gloom. Big-ass baddies that are fucking kicking ass, taking names. And, I mean, the superheroes are just sitting around going, poor us. You know, they're like sitting there with their shoulders shrugged, with their hands out, both sides, fucking with their pockets inside out. You know. And so, another reason why I'm smashing them together, because I like them. There's something to me about you have huge, powerful entities laying the fucking smackdown on everybody, and of course it's inevitable, and I like the hero beaten down so much and watching their inevitable rise to conquer the bad peoples. So and the other reason why I'm kind of mashing them together is I'm too fucking lazy, stupid, and hungover to actually write a review. A quick comment on the art. I mean, it's Marvel's DC. These are great. There was a couple things I wanted to point out to you guys. Something about, and it had not been really in the story, the first page of Hunger during the summary, there's something about the way that was drawn just stood out to me. It almost had a Saturday morning cartoon-ish feel to it.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Which I really, really enjoyed. So... and then the other thing, and this is actually, this is about the only thing that kind of scratches my head on this. Now, I'll pass this around to you guys. Now, you guys familiar with you guys, we good? We good?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You guys seen the, I want to see the White Ranger. It's the White Lantern.
Kyle? Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle. Look at that fucking mask. I mean, seriously, it's like he fucking took a dictionary and fucking from the 70s and just duct taped it to his face.
You know, I do like that you brought that analogy, because the Green Ranger became the White Ranger. He was a Green Lantern that became the White Lantern.
What?
No, totally copying.
No original ideas.
Like who likes Power Rangers that much?
Is that why Zordon called earlier to tell you that? Yeah. Is that you should call them out for that? Hey, I just had a couple comments I want to make on Hunger because one, I thought it was really cool that the Kree are the ones that created the Galactus swarm as like their ultimate weapon. Then that went against them. So it shows that the Krees are all a bunch of bastards. But what was even cooler is that when Rick Jones is having his "I'm down, I don't know if I can be a hero" moment, he goes back home. He's from Forest Hills, Queens. And you know who else is from Forest Hills, Queens? Peter Parker. And in the Ultimate Universe, Peter Parker is dead. And because he's dead, they also knew that he was Spider-Man. And so they've got like a little memorial in front of his house with his picture and flowers. And Rick Jones stops there and he's like, "Whoa, I didn't know that he was Spider-Man. You know, like, I grew up down the street." And then Mary Jane comes. He goes, "Oh, you're that girl, Mary Jane, right?" And she's like, "Yeah." He goes, "What happened? How did he die?" He goes, "He died being really brave." And so they actually took the fact that death of Spider-Man was what kind of helped Rick Jones go, "All right, maybe I do need to hero up here." So I thought that was, like, a really nice touching moment in it. So
cool.
Spoiler. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
We already covered that. We're good. All right, I'm going to discuss a little ruining the time stream here myself. And
what's Marvel up to now?
Well, and that's exactly what it is. I do want to point out, I would have liked to have reviewed All New X-Men Special Number 1, except...
It's not that special?
I think I'm missing pages.
Hmm.
There's no title page in here anywhere. And the first page that I have... Clearly, there's a panel cut off on the bottom. So, I haven't read it yet, you know. But I can't. I'm looking through. I'm like, who wrote this? Who drew this?
Did you count the number of advertisements in there? Because that'll give you a sure number if you have the proper number of advertisements.
Well, and there's no Marvel coming next month page at the back end. So yeah,
And those would have been what was stapled. As they do the covers, that would make sense that you would be missing front pages and back pages.
Right, and that's why I'm thinking that I'm missing at least one. So
that's funny.
I'm angry at you, Marvel. Get better quality control on.
Did you read it without it being?
No, but you know, as funny as I would be curious to know is how many of fucked up printings there were like that. Because I mean, yeah. If it's rare enough, it might add some value to the book.
You want
to
buy it?
I'd say the cover is actually really cool.
It's an incomplete story, so I'll give you
half the price.
It's $4.99. I'll give you $2.50 for it.
Yeah, well, we'll work something out. All right, so I am going to talk about the part 6 of the Battle of the Atom story, which is in All New X-Men number 17, written by Brian Michael Bendis, pencils by Stuart Immonen, inks by Wade Von Grawbadger. I do love saying that
nice.
Name. And Marty Garcia did colors on this. I've held off on mentioning anything in this story because I'm like, I don't know. I get a little nervous because Marvel has a tendency to, on big events, sometimes not follow through. And, you know, we're all familiar with hammers and things that happened there.
I'm so afraid of hammers now.
Yeah. But Battle of the Atom, the basic premise, all of it comes out of the All-New X-Men title where Hank went back, Henry McCoy went back in time and brought the original X-Men to the present to show them what Scott does so that he can go back in time and be a good kid and not kill Professor X later on, more or less. And they don't want to go back, and now it's this giant thing. They have to go back. They're going to fuck up the time stream by being here. And now future X-Men have come back to the current to tell old X-Men they have to go back to the past.
Okay.
Because that's the general...
I follow.
The general story of what's going on in here. This one, this particular issue, Bendis pulled a little at my heartstrings. It's very, very Days of Future Past-ish. Where you're seeing the future and you're seeing how things go bad.
And you're seeing the past too? Like future past?
Well, you're seeing the current. You're not actually seeing any past. But for the future people, it is the past.
So it's... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all based off your perspective.
Yeah. And if you just take a couple letters from the future and a couple letters from past, you can spell FUPA. And that's something completely different. But anyway, this story opens up in the future where Alison Blair, a.k.a. Dazzler, has been elected president. First mutant president ever. And then she's instantly assassinated and, you know, hell breaks loose. And you see these future X-Men who have come back to warn current X-Men and past X-Men that they're fucking things up. And you see that they're not happy about this and blah, blah, blah. Well, Magic, Ileana Rasputin, current, has gone into the future because she now can not only teleport, she figured out how to time travel.
Well, Limbo, yeah, is connected to time and space, and that was kind of a cool, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Hmm. So she's now gone ahead, finds out that actually the X-Men that came back aren't the actual X-Men, they're the bad X-Men. And Bendis just did a really nice job at having all of this make sense. You know, this was a tough issue to have make sense too, which is why I really want to talk about it. And I'm not going to give away too many of the spoilers and stuff, but there's also really nice moments in here where, you know, Colossus sees Magic and he's like, oh my God, you know, and she's like, hey, wait, why do you have, you know, why do you have my sword? And he's like, well, you gave it to me when you died, you know, kind of thing. And so, but they're just very nice touches in there. Future Iceman is cool as shit. He looks like
he's made out of ice.
Well, he looks like a crazy old wizard.
He grew an ice beard.
Yeah, he did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is quite cool. And the past Bobby is freaking out.
Yeah, because he's still snow.
Yeah, he still looks like Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on him. He's all smooth because wasn't he more like snowball esque?
Yeah, slightly lumpy.
Yeah.
But Stuart Immonen though did a fantastic job on the art overall, just in this whole book, and it was just really really nice. And I actually picked up his variant 1 in 25 cover on this one.
You know, I know you're saying that Bendis does a really good job wrapping it all up and stuff, but I'm pretty sure it's because he is a time traveler himself, and that all of this is a cry for help, that he wants to write an autobiography about his time travel adventures, but most people don't think it would be believable, so he writes fiction instead.
I think what it is that there's like one panel in every book that he's written where you're kind of like, that doesn't completely make sense, but it fits. When you go back and you tie all those panels together, you will have his autobiography.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that already, Bendis, you really should, because that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. We should have Robert Downey Jr. tell him about it next time we're, you know, having a picnic with him. Wait, Tony, I thought we were going grilling at RDJ's house.
We are.
You are completely dead today.
All right. I am worthless.
Well, suck it up, Buttercup. Let's see what you read this week.
give us that triple A star review. Classic Tony. Tony. I feel like almost like, actually that's kind of true. That's not a joke. All right, what I want to talk about today, because I did read many a book, is Hinterkind number 1. Now, I know none of you
who and by up. Who?
Oh, what?
What from did you who mean? And by who?
Hinterkind.
Hint or hit?
Hint. Hinter.
Hinter.
Oh. Okay. Written by Ian Eddington. Art by Francesco Trefagoli. This is a new book that just came out from Vertigo. And the simplest way to, I guess, to tie it to anything, why readers should really read it, or listeners should read it, is I'd almost compare it to The Walking Dead in a sense of you're in a world where humans are kind of decimated. This takes, it doesn't really give away the event or what happened, but you're in this world where nature has taken back
the world.
So the Lorax, like, came back with a vengeance and was like...
Pretty much so.
I speak for the trees, and then actually did something about it.
And the trees have grown all over New York City and everything. So there are still humans left in the world. However, the species is an endangered species now. And now there are a lot more tigers, lions, shit in
bears,
the...
Bears, oh my.
Yes. And then they follow the yellow brick road. So that's where I'm kind of comparing it to The Walking Dead, where you get sucked into the what's going on, how's this going, and really feeling for the characters because they are some of the last survivors. And this follows two characters in particular. Something that the reader is introduced earlier in the sense of what's going on, and I won't give away that detail, but at the end, what you run into is what I'd commonly refer to as mutants. They are humans that are, you know...
Mutated?
Yes. That's how mutations work. They mutate. And with that...
As Jeff Goldblum would say, nature finds a way.
With that gives a sense of...
Which is Jurassic Park reference.
I know, but then it instantly made me think of The Fly.
Yeah, if nature will find a way to, you know, crossbreed animals with humanity.
Well, no, and Fly got into the little transporter.
Nature found a way.
Yeah.
Flies find a way into everything. Hate those bastards.
Remember watching that Family Dad or American Dad the other day?
Family Dad?
Family Dad? Oh, you know American... Show.
The new Fox...
American Family?
No, American Guy? Yeah. I think that's what it was. We're watching American Guy.
All right. What about it?
American Simpsons.
Tony, how many brain cells did you fucking kill last night?
Enough to not function.
All right, so we meet mutants is what you were saying last.
Yes, and that gives a whole different sense of what this book is about. And this was like kind of the last couple of pages of introducing these other characters. Now, ultimately, the art was great. The story had me hooked. And I really want to know what's going on with this world. It intrigued me enough to where I'm definitely going to keep on buying it. I didn't know at first what this whole story was about, so I just picked it up on a whim. Although I was hearing great, you know, reviews beforehand of, gotta check this out. I'm now one of those people of, this was a story that I can see becoming the next Walking Dead. It's going to be one of those books where people are going to be like, holy shit, I can't wait to read that next and get to it. So definitely go pick that up. And it, I don't know, like I said, it almost feels like it takes a little bit of myth as well. Like there's also mutated animals. Like it looked like it was a three-horned unicorn, even though it'd be a trinicorn. So yeah, that's what I got, and now my brain cells are totally dead, so I'll shut up now.
No, good job, man.
I'm curious, and I don't actually know off the top of my head, so I will try and look at the same time, but curious if Hinterkind is going to be a limited series, because it seems like the majority of what's coming out of Vertigo right now is.
Mm-hmm.
So I will attempt to peek in here at the same time while we're looking. But let's kick off... some news and notes, then.
Newts.
I haven't said that in forever.
I know, that's why I said it.
I've loved that silence.
Yeah. Speaking of silence, go back to your coma.
We'll prod you with a stick when you need to hit stop.
Yeah. By the way, I did look. I don't see any note of Hinterkind being a limited series. So, Tony, hopefully... you're correct on this being the new Walking Dead, and you're sitting on a $1,000 book right now.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Anything stand out to you guys this week?
There was actually a lot of stuff that was out here.
Well, I thought there was like little shits out there. Okay. First of all, what the fuck, Marvel? God damn it!
what'd they do now?
Atonement.
What's
the other one?
The new teasers?
The new teasers.
Fucking Atonement and then Gibberish. Higher.
That could be what it's
higher, called. How higher was the other one? What? I don't care. care? Why don't you just tell us? Tell us what they are.
Okay.
Release a press. Just give us a press release.
Aid. Actually, you'll be pissed because then there's Sinners, and there's, I think, another one, too.
Oh, well, we had a couple last week, and you know...
I think there hasn't been, like, one or two every week for the last 6 weeks.
Now, I understand in the fact that they're trying to drum up interest, especially for their panels at New York Comic Con, and they're going to have a massive press release about stuff that's going out there. I get it. Last week you asked me, you're like, you know, if I like these. I'm like, I do really like these because they're fun. This week I'm like, I'm sick of them. Stop it. Like, you just, you know, you went from having fun, like, Tickle Monster to, okay, now I just shit myself. And that's not fun anymore.
What the hell was, are you serious, Tickle Monster?
Yeah, like Tickle Monster, I can't stop laughing, and now I poop.
Oh, okay. I thought that was like one of their teasers that you were saying. Like, who the fuck's cover was that?
That would be awesome. Tickle Monster.
Wolverine series.
Yeah. A new monthly series.
He puts feathers on.
Yeah. Yeah. Hear more about it at the X-Men panel.
I didn't even bother reading the article. I mean, is there anything mentioned worthy about what these are tied to at all? Or
oh, I didn't
been announced.
It just no. Oh, there's not even speculation.
No, they just they had now the one with Kelly Sue DeConnick with Hire. My guess is that Carol Danvers, Green Lantern's girlfriend, Carol Danvers.
Ferris is actually Ferris. I just remembered now.
Oh, okay.
But
yeah.
Yeah, Green Lantern.
But, no, so, you know, because she's been struggling. Now, I am behind on my Captain Marvel titles, but, you know, she had that tumor and she wasn't able to fly. And Kelly Sue DeConnick's writing that. I'm guessing that it's all going to be fixed.
Yeah, some of these, if you see which panel they're going to be in talking about it, as well as who the, you know, the artists and writers are, you kind of get a sense of what the book's going to be about.
But, you know, give Marvel another, like, you know, 2 days and they're going to already spoil, like, you know, hi, let me tease you for, like, you know, 2 minutes. Okay, well, this is what it's really
about.
Well,
luckily, you know, New York is what, here in a week now?
Yep.
Is that right?
Well, Derek, are you happy with the giant ones behind everything, as in they're going to retitle these books?
Yeah, everything's going to be number one again. You know,
we're
at
number
the point.
One, artificially. We're number one.
Well, here's the great thing. You know, everybody loves number ones, and it's a...
not everyone.
No. I do, too, because it's a perfect jumping off point.
Jumping off point, yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm at the point where I'm a little cynical today, and I'm just like, quit fucking with my books, because now you're giving me a reason to stop. But cool things...
Really? Would you jump off just because they renumbered them?
If they're changing the creative team and renumbering it, then at that point it's no longer my series anymore. So
you only read for the creative team and the numbers, not the characters and the story?
I actually read for all of them.
So. No, but I get it. If you're collecting so many books per week and you're like, hey, you know, I'm kind of don't want to take I don't want to take a risk on these ones.
But I don't collect and I don't read just for the characters because there's. I mean, there are a bunch of X-Men titles that I don't read out there. You know, I'm lucky in the fact that Daredevil is a killer book right now. And there's there's like one kind of miniseries that's going on right now outside of that. And it's okay, you know, but it's still enjoyable. But that's it. Two Daredevil books, you know. I don't. And if one of them sucked, well, then fine. I'd be reading one Daredevil book. But there's a lot of X-Men books that I don't bother picking up. And you guys know I'm a huge X-Men fan. Mm-hmm. I don't even bother.
Fucking anyone pick them all up? Don't they? Aren't there like 12 of them now?
I don't even 18? Know. Like I don't read Uncanny Avengers. Still, which that's half X-Men.
I still think there's more Avengers titles than X-Men, but they're in fierce competition.
Yeah, but I mean, to answer your question though, I mean, I would much rather read about characters that I don't know about from a creative team that I love than read about characters I know about from a creative team that I don't think is pulling their weight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of X-Men, did you see this trailer of Chris Claremont and his X-Men?
Yeah, the documentary.
Thing? Yeah. I watched it. I think it's for the link on that, and that was pretty cool. I wish I could, you know, like the entire all these really cool events. Like I wish I could be there, but it was a neat trailer. We got this from we got this from
it was Bleeding Cool, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, Bleeding Cool. Yeah, it was a just a small trailer of a little upcoming speaking engagement he's going to be doing at in Columbia University.
Yeah. Yeah,
Derek saw it, and the first thing he did when he got home is showed me. He's like, Tony, you got to totally watch this. And
it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It got me wanting to watch the actual documentary.
Yeah, no, I just thought it was pretty slick. All right, New York Comic Con, for those of you that are going, and gear up, because Image actually announced some convention exclusives I thought was kind of cool. There's a bunch of, like, Walking Dead stuff there, but the one thing that I thought was kind of the cool, you know, you got that like little satchel type thing that you can have, and they're all embroidered with the different like kind of team names, if you will. You've got the Saviors, you've got Kingdom, you've got Hilltop, and you've got Survivors, and so, you know, all your different factions or towns. So you can kind of pick which one. That was something I thought was kind of cool. But then there's issue 1 of 3 coming out there's an exclusive cover there. Rocket Girl from Amy Reeder and Brandon Montclair, which we backed on Kickstarter, they're having their issue 1 there. So those are kind of some other things. There's a blank Ghosted cover, a whole bunch of other fun shit there. So go check out the Image exclusives for New York.
Did you guys see that they're doing an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cover month in November?
It doesn't surprise me.
Exclusively, you know.
On DC books?
Yeah.
They're going to do 52 Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. covers?
Which, when it comes to variant covers, some are good. Sometimes the regular cover is better. These are just pictures of the characters on front of the cover. Like,
well, they've done that, like, when the Wolverine movie came out, when the Iron Man movie comes out, Thor movie, like, everyone has different, like, they all have these covers that are just blatantly only for their, you know, their
media.
Yeah,
but is that book is then also usually about the movie or something, so.
Not at all.
Not at all?
Okay. No.
I never pick them up because they look stupid.
Yeah, there's like an X-Force, I remember, that was Thor, and it was just everybody standing there from Thor, like the poster of the Usual Suspects. It was a neat little poster. Thor's not anywhere in the book. And that's going to be the way that these are. It won't have anything to do with them. All right. The one little note here I thought was kind of interesting was Jeff Smith has joined the board of directors for the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, people mostly know him as, you know, the creator of Bone and also Razzle, but, I mean, very prominent self-published or independent publisher himself, so I think he will be a great person for that, and, well, I'll talk more about the CBLDF later.
I got a, might be a little bit old news, but The Gutters, a website that does satire of the comic book industry and of comic book events, they had to fund a Kickstarter because they're having difficulty putting out all the Gutters each week and all the other projects they're doing. It was funded, so we will get another year of The Gutters, so congrats to them. And also go check them out because their site's got a lot of fun news and really the satire that you wish that you could say to some of the publishers. So
yeah. Kevin, what else did you have this week?
You know, I don't know why. Why did we start talking about Revolution X, the arcade game? We were discussing this.
The Aerosmith arcade game?
Yeah, you remember the.
You brought up Aerosmith for some reason.
No. Oh, I remember. It's because Al Jorgensen. Is it Jorgensen? Yeah. From Ministry, the heavy metal band, he's getting his own comic book series. And, you know, this is one of those things, I try to be positive on here, but this is one of those things that just because you can make a comic book doesn't mean you always should. And I'm basing this solely on the premise that they give, that Al Jorgensen is going to be, you know, in here, and they're... Their little premise that they set up is that the series is going to follow Alien F. Jorgensen. Like, you know, if you take the IEN, it's Al.
Okay.
Off. A budding musician discovered by a record label that seeks to control him. He soon discovers that he has inherent powers that are triggered by playing music and must combat aliens, figure out conspiracy theories, and deal with institutionalized corruption. That's the direct quote from the RollingStone.com article.
And when it has, the article ends like, everyone imagines themselves as a superhero.
Yeah, who doesn't want to be a superhero? Yeah. And that's great, but just because you can doesn't mean you should. I mean, you know, and I don't know.
Is your story giving us something new?
Here's my thing. The only people that are going to read this, in my opinion, are people that, number one, like comic books and also like ministry. Mm-hmm. If you're not, if you like ministry, I don't think you're going to go pick up a comic book if you don't like comics.
Yeah.
And if you like comics and you don't give a shit about ministry, you're probably not going to buy this one. So
yeah, unless it's drawn awesomely.
And like Aerosmith, he shoots CDs and like, well, I think that's the hard part. Like, you can't have that game now because how do you shoot MP3s at people?
Dude,
you know,
dude, you guys, listeners, iPods. Man, you gotta check it out, man. If you have no idea what we're talking about, look up Revolution X arcade cabinet, and it's an Aerosmith inspired shooter game where music is the weapon. It's fucking ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Actually, I pulled up a promotional flyer for it. It's just absolutely ridiculous premise for a game. It was not very good, but anyway.
But Kevin still played it.
Oh, I fucking played. What didn't I play growing up?
Tony, did you have anything, or is the booze still seeping through your veins?
Oh God, I'm yes.
Are you gonna puke?
Yeah. No.
You gonna upchuck?
No, I'm good on not hurling.
You did send a link earlier, something about Scarlet Witch, Tony.
Oh yeah, one of the Olsons.
Yeah, the youngest sister of the Olsons.
Yeah,
the Olsen twins.
Yeah.
No, their younger sister.
Wait,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they got a younger sister.
Yeah, they have another Olsen, and she's going to be cast as the Scarlet Witch, which is.
The poor of the Olsen twins.
Yes, yeah. It was a charity case. Like, they're two billionaires. We'll give this one a shot.
Yeah, she only has millions. Yeah.
I will say this: like, I've heard, you know, that there was another Olsen sibling. She's done her, you know, her own thing. She wanted to be tied to her other billionaire sisters.
Yeah, that's what she says.
Yeah, you know.
I don't want to make as much money as they do.
So it's, I don't know, it's interesting. I saw a picture, and she looks a little young, like this is going to be a younger Scarlet Witch then. But, I mean, I guess if she's as good an actor as her sister, she could pull it off.
No, actually, I can't remember, because she was in something, and I was like, who is that? And my wife's like, I think that's the Olsen.
Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah, there it is. And I was like, how, they have a sister? So I IMDb'd her, and I think she has done a couple things, like legitimate acting roles, not just, you know, look at me, I'm this cute little three-year-old on Full House.
Maybe we might get Uncle Jesse in the next Avengers movie.
We got his ex-wife.
Hey, cut it out.
Bob Saget could be.
Bob Saget is, God, that man is filthy.
Yep.
All right, speaking of things that aren't filthy.
Be Mole Man.
I don't even want to know. I ran across this article from comicbookmovie.com that there's a new writer for the Emily the Strange movie, which the reason that this is news is more news to me because I didn't know that there was one in the works. I think it's cool that there is. I've liked the character and you know what little bit I've read of Emily the Strange, and so it's kind of neat to see that there's going to be something. I'm afraid it's going to be, I don't know, I just have this gut feeling that they're going to try and make that very Addams Family-esque. Mm. But I don't know.
Nothing wrong with that. Addams Family was all right.
Yeah.
For movies. DC is also trying to steal more money from me because I am going to continue buying some of the tie-ins. They just came up with another tie-in for Forever Evil called Forever Evil Blight. which is an 18-part crossover. Yeah, so it's going to be Justice League Dark, Trinity of Sin, Constantine, and all these titles. It's a new character they're introducing called Blight, who is the manifestation of all evil, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, fuck you guys. I can't buy it, but I might. I probably will.
Yeah, you will.
Blight's it's a already dumb pre-order. Name. I like that name.
There was one more article that I have to bring up before we move on. Only because it cracked me up. Because it's from Sports Illustrated.
Dude. SI, man. Yeah. Who would have thought we would ever bring up SI in this podcast?
Yeah. And the title of their article is Comic Book Legend Todd McFarlane to Make Ridiculously Priced WWE Action Figures. Problem number one, these are statues.
Yeah. They don't really move.
These are
statues.
But then
statues. Again, a lot of McFarlane's like Spawn toys, like they really were statues because where they did move made no sense for playing with them.
Well, they were very limited in the movement, but they were still an action figure. They came in a blister pack. I mean, this is something that I can pretty much guarantee is going to come in a box surrounded by styrofoam.
Yeah.
You know, an action figure, and I'll even give you this. An action figure could probably be an action figure if its feet aren't going to be, like, you know, attached to the base it's on, and that's, I'm guessing, what this is. But anyway, they're talking about, in the article, that they're saying that this is the first one they show is the Undertaker, and it's gorgeous, the picture of it, I think. And they're like, the figure will cost a whopping $295. Only 850 will be produced, so this series is indeed limited edition. But really? $295 for an action figure? Do a little fucking research.
Yeah.
$300 for one of these statues is right on par.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of those, like, busts or, you know, collectible. Yeah.
The busts will go for, like, you know, 100 to 200.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor job, Sports Illustrated, on trying to cover the nerd world.
You stupid jocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go back to looking at girls in bikinis.
When I read this article, I had that I'm getting old moment. As it says, we'll surely return for next year's WrestleMania 30.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I mean, I remember watching the first one.
Jeez.
Mold.
So Undertaker's still wrestling?
Apparently.
Yeah, he only makes special appearances because he's old.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to do it for news and notes this week.
All right.
And so should we
good segment. Good segment.
Hop onto the Indy Turnpike?
Let's do it.
Yes.
Cool. All right. What Tony, what are you doing? Are you waiting
Tony,
to punch
no,
him?
Tony, you cannot no Tony, you cannot make any sound effects of driving here because you're drunk. And that would be drunk driving.
That's the best one you've ever done on that.
Thank you.
All right, for Indy Turnpike, I picked up the CBLDF, or as we discussed earlier, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund Liberty Annual 2013. And
how often are they making books?
Well, annually.
Once a year.
It's just the one book?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
It's their fundraiser, right?
It's I think as much for trying to raise some kind of, you know, funds as, but it's just as much, if not more, to bring awareness.
Okay.
This one, I mean, because last year I liked it, and I think last year was the first time I picked one of these up. I really liked it last year, but this one, I mean, they just hit you over the head with the fact that this is here to fight censorship. And, you know, you've got the first scene in here is called Don't Open It, and it's like written, drawn, colored, everything by Fabio Moon. And it's this girl looking in this briefcase. It's a one-page story, and, you know, the artist said, don't look in there, you know, don't look in the bag, don't look at the bag. And she looks in there, and she saw something that she wasn't used to seeing anymore, something that nobody was allowed to have anymore, an idea. But the whole thing in here, I mean, like, it talks about, like, censorship during Nazi Germany in here, you know, and how a guy that did cabaret shows was sent to, you know,
a concentration camp.
Thank you. There's some that talk about, you know, the hoax hunters with Michael Marici, who you guys talked to at Motor City last year. You know, it just talks about how censoring people and making up false things is just as bad. And mm-hmm. it's a very, very interesting thing. There was one really fantastic, very, very good story in here called The Shoot, which was from Gabriel Hardman and Karina Bechko. And it was right after the film camera had come out. And basically it talks about how Edison was getting patents on everything. Well, you can't patent the camera, but he could patent the film loop. And so you had patent men coming after people trying to destroy cameras if they weren't the Edison camera. Yep. And this and that.
Yeah. Edison, it turns out, was kind of a douchebag. Good businessman, but was really kind of a dick as far as copyrights and stuff.
Yeah. Viva la Tesla.
Viva la Tesla.
This was just such a great story, how you get these patent men coming after him, and the main actor at the very beginning of this little story breaks his leg, and they're like, how are we going to get our ending now? Well, they set it up and kind of get a ruse on the patent men. The patent men start chasing these guys. They catch it all on their camera.
Nice.
And they're like, we got our ending, ha-ha. And so they've got all of them on film, shoot, you know, these government guys. Really smart story. I think one of the most fun ones, because I was actually reading this outdoors, you know, at an open air market thing here yesterday, is the last story, What If Werthmann Was Right, by Josh Williamson and Ron Chan. And it's these little kids that they find nudie mags, and they're like, yeah, whatever. And, you know, like, okay, nudie mags, boo, we've seen all those. And they're like, hey, what's this? And it's an old Superman comic. And so the kid, you know, they're like, wow, more, and takes it home, and the dad's like, what are you reading? Jesus, no! and then they have to call the comic code authority in, but it's too late because he read comics and now the kid's bad. He's going to stab his sister, and you go outside and all the kids have read the comics and they're just going nuts because they read comics, and it's too late. Time to slaughter the children.
That's funny. You know.
But good job, you know, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, on putting out, number one, a great quality comic that raises awareness, but thank you for doing what you do and helping out, especially the small publishers.
I'm so glad no one has tried to come censor us.
I forgot I was going to do a New Turnpike. I was going to do Archie.
Well, if you actually had functioning brain cells, you could have.
You could do it. You could do it next week.
Yeah,
but Archie, the Thor one. Yeah, issue,
the Thor
pretty
variant.
Good.
Did you guys have any votes for Best on Tap this week?
No.
I think it's just goofy enough to mention it is a collection. It's not a single issue, but it's called Why Grizzly Bears Should Wear Underpants. I mean, there's not much to it. It's just a goofy looking grizzly bear with goofy eyes. You know, that just put a smile to my face. But I don't think that was the best of the best, because I mean there were some good ones out there. There was a new trade paperback, Avengers
Endless
Wartime.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool, but Derek, looked like you got one.
I had one that I just really loved was the Lazarus cover for issue 4 from Michael Lark. You know, beyond the cover and the detail, I just thought that it was colored very, very well. And they've had really nice covers on all these, but this is probably my pick on it. It's certainly not a jumping on point on this issue, I will say that. So if you buy it just for the cover and you haven't read anything, you better go back. But, yeah. All right, well, then I guess we'll stay undecided for this week. But that's it. All right, Lazarus. Good job.
Since you actually have it in your hand, whereas I'm just going through Comixology.
Oh, it's okay. That's cool. Cool. All right. Booze in a book, and I think that's going to just about do it for us.
I don't think Tony can handle any more booze.
Tony, close your ears, because you're going to really hate this one then. I've got this week The Witching Hour from Vertigo, and it's The Witching Hour number one. And there are 9 different stories in here, all horror stories. And you've got a whole
Don't
bunch
call
of people
them
in
horrors. They're witches.
That's the first page. That's the first story. It's 3 little horrors. No, it's three little girls are witches. But anyway, I'm not going to get into what the book is. But this is a great collection. Now, it's $8.
Holy fuck.
It's pricey, but you get 9 stories.
I can almost buy a 30-pack of hams for that much money.
What's funny is that you're close to what I think that you should be pairing this with. This big old, you know, compendium almost of comics, 9 different tales in here. There's a little something for everyone. My recommendation is that you pair this with a 12-pack of some kind of variety pack. Go find a small microbrew out there, especially this time of year. You got horror. Go find their fall special. Mm-hmm. Get yourself some Oktoberfest in there, some, you know, this
some
and that.
Pumpkin beers.
And try stuff that you haven't tried before. And it's the same reason I think you should pick this up. You're going to introduce yourself to a large number of creators that you may not have ever read before.
And if you have 1 beer per story, you'll feel like Tony in the morning.
Man, I'll throw out a specific.
You guys don't party enough.
No, we just are actually a little bit better at it than you are.
Man, I'll throw out a suggestion for that sampler. Actually, I almost didn't pick it up, but the Leinenkugel, that's a big enough brand out there that most people would know about. The fall Leinenkugel sampler has 4 different beers in it. And actually, one of them, and I don't really care for too much for hoppy beers, but they actually, I forget what it's called. It's like some sort of hop slam or something like that.
Hopnoxious and, yeah.
Yeah, or something
hop
like that.
Hop you over the head with
but
it.
That's a really good 4 pack. So props to the line of Google's for their sampler.
So, yeah, get creative and then tell us what you bought because we like beer.
Yeah, we'll probably drink it if we haven't already. I just had a Lithuanian beer the other night called Werewolf. It was good, and I was like, this is from Lithuania. That's weird.
That's really weird, because last night when Kevin was doing the Pulaski Days, he was at a Latvian hall.
Latvian? Really? Doom was there?
Yeah, yeah. It's founded by Dr. Doom. No, it's the Latvian hall.
Latvian hall. But I don't know how many times I kept on saying Latvian.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's because you're a woodsmith.
Yeah.
Which we never came back.
Yeah, we never did explain it. How are we sitting on time?
We're too late.
It was an inside joke. And, you know, explaining inside jokes never works out well to our listeners.
Never. So let's...
No.
Short version, Kevin referred to a carpenter as a woodsmith. And it was fun. There you go.
They can be woodsmiths. Why not?
All right. Any last calls?
Oh, yes. Matt, you got a stack there. What do you got?
Well, Forever Evil number 2 came out. So if you've been spending all of your paychecks getting all the villains covers, you should probably check out the main story arc.
Mara, number 6 of 6. So the conclusion to what was a really good story. I'm not going to spoil anything on that. You got to read it for yourself.
As I mentioned before, Archie, the Clot of Thunder was my first Archie book I've ever bought. It was actually kind of funny and cool.
Dude, I say there's a reason why Archie's still around, man. It's good stuff.
Well, that and he's got 2 hot chicks that want him. I mean, I don't understand.
Didn't he get married to one of them?
He's been married to both of them.
It depends on which universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Okay. Because Marvel, like, stopped by and showed
time traveled.
How to time travel and split universes. Trillium, number, what is this, 3?
Yeah.
Came out. That was a good one. Tony, are you? What, you got anything else? You're yawning pretty bad there.
Iron Man was good. It's finally wrapping up this whole origin thing, which surprisingly
didn't
suck as much as I thought it was going to.
Yeah, there's a few things that I'd qualm with, but overall, doesn't bug me too much.
I say MacGyver Fugitive Gauntlet trade paperback is out right now. I mean, I picked this up, the 5-part series.
Didn't you miss 1 issue in there?
No, I found it.
Oh, cool.
No, I've read through that series. That is
MacGyver.
MacGyver Fugitive Gauntlet. You got to check that out. That's some good shit.
Doctor Who Prisoners of Time, number 9. I am a couple issues back on this, but I've found that it actually helps me to read a few issues in one sitting, since I know very little about this. Mm-hmm. But the series has been cool. I did mention it earlier, Absolution Rubicon, number 4. Jesus, is this a good series. Just fantastic. There's one more issue left in this miniseries.
You said, Jesus, it's a good issue, and it says John 3:16 on the cover.
Oh, yeah, because the main character's name is John.
It's just a Jesus reference. Give him props.
And he loves 3:16.
Tony was doing the impersonation of his father earlier, so I was just giving props.
Are any of you guys reading The Star Wars?
The Star Wars?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the one that was based on Lucas's original script. Yeah.
No, I'd heard that. It's like Luke Starkiller or something? Or?
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to get into it. Okay. Good story. It's really cool if you're a Star Wars fan. I hate the fact that it's George Lucas starring in the Star Wars comic. That's it. Daredevil Dark Knights,
I like that cover.
The Daredevil?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool cover.
Yeah, this has been a fun book. Big shout out, Hit number 2 from Boom Studios, written by Bryce Carlson, art by Vanessa R. Del Rey.
See, I was pissed because that was another book that my local comic book shop did not have.
I'm surprised.
Yeah. But again, it's a new store opened up. They're just still learning the area.
They're trying to figure out their orders.
Yeah.
Last two shout outs, Bedlam and Lady Rawhide. But yeah, a lot of good books this week.
You still reading Bedlam?
Yeah.
Has it gotten better? Kind of, I don't know.
It really peaked. It kind of dropped, plateaued, and it's picking back up again.
Okay.
I got one more of RoboCop Last Stand, number 3. Though, I'm going to keep on reading it. It's RoboCop, but I'm almost tempted to wag the finger at it. Like, RoboCop Last Stand is almost turning out to be RoboCop 3, the movie.
Ooh.
And like
this, bad choice,
but you know what? I'm holding on. So stay tuned for your RoboCop updates coming up.
Cool. Well, let's go get Tony and IV. You know,
I'm sorry, I was so worthless today. I just,
you didn't contribute at all.
I did too much Pulaskian and
Pulaskian.
Well, did you take Friday off work to go start pre-Pulaskian? I think. More or less how it happened?
Oh, yeah, I started Thursday night. I still worked Friday. Not much, but I have been worthless since Thursday night.
Awesome. All right, guys. I'm Derek.
I'm Matt.
Kevin.
I'm drunk.
And keep reading those comics, guys. We'll be back to talk to you more about them next week.